you very much. As Rory said, I'm Tom English. I'm a project lead in research and development at Morgan Advanced Materials. I'd like to thank the organisers for allowing me to speak today. I'm stepping in for a colleague, so I'm not going to thank him for the very long title there, which is refractories as both an emitter of carbon during production and as a facilitator of green processing in high temperature industries. So just a little bit of a background on Morgan. We're a company with a £1 billion turnover annually with double-digit profit margins. But we have a purpose at Morgan, and that is to use advanced materials to help make the world more sustainable and to improve the quality of life. We use a three-pronged approach to try and achieve that, making use of our experience in material science and application engineering, which is where I come in from a research background. And we're trying to do that with a customer focus, which is why I'm here today talking to all of you. We're in a wide variety of different products. You can see on the left there quite a few different products. So I'm focusing on refractories, which are the fibres and the insulating fire bricks in the top left. But we also touch on areas such as engineered ceramics, ceramic cores, and electrical carbon. To dive a little bit deeper into those products, I reflected on the definition of the word refractory. So it's something that's stubborn, resisting control, unresponsive, immune, and intersceptible. And that rings true into material science as well, where refractories are a material that's resistant to decomposition by heat or chemical attack and retains its strength and rigidity at high temperatures. some of the products forms that we have and that I'm going to talk to you about today with a few case studies and dive into a bit of detail on. Our most popular product is fibre, so that's very similar to the sort of insulation that you might see in your home, sort of loft insulation, cavity wall insulation, but obviously for much higher temperature applications than in the house. That's available in a blanket form, which is a simple wrap-around blanket. It can also be encapsulated to hold in dust. Or processed into bulk paper or lumped together into something we call a module. The second product there is IFBs, insulating fire bricks. Again, going back to the home analogy, they have a very similar appearance and function to the bricks in your home. They're really good insulators, but they provide a lot of strength in different applications like furnaces. And finally, you get to monolithics. They're very much like the cement foundation of your house. They're used in the floors of really big kilns as well. So they're the materials that I'm here to talk about today. As an example of some of the industries that we work in, when we're talking about high temperature industries, we're talking about temperature processes where the temperature might be between 800 and 1600 degrees Celsius. And the function of the ceramic parts or the refractories, as demonstrated by the image on the very far left of the woman with a board, an insulating board protecting her face from the high temperature blowtorch. So that's the function really, is to keep the energy, the high temperature energy from one side of a process from escaping to the outside, preventing that heat flow. And it reduces the cost of the energy that you would use in a process and in turn the emissions to the environment from processes. Some of the industries that we're in, sort of power generation, fire protection, cement and glass, iron and steel, and chemical processing, all of these really high temperature industries make use of insulation. How do we do that? So I'll just very quickly give you an overview of the sort of principles behind the ways that our products block the transfer of energy. So heat energy can be transferred in three ways. A bit of a trip to our back to our GCSE or O-level physics. Conduction, convection, and radiation. So by making materials from a very poor conductors, such as the ceramics that we use, and having a very defined structure with a really long path length, so you can see the length of the chain from the bottom right to the top left of the image there. By having a very long path with minimal points of contact, you're really reducing conduction. For convection, we design products with lots of tiny little air pockets, and that prevents any heated air for moving through the product. And for radiation, our products are designed with a specifically targeted particle size to block the path of radiation from one side to the other. As an example of how that looks in application, so the breaking down of hydrocarbons in an ethylene cracker, so that's a that takes place at 850 degrees, but because of the design of the furnace, you might have hot zones which reach up to 1250. That process is responsible for 200 million tons of carbon emissions annually globally, and we're talking about really energy-intensive units using 50 to 100 megawatts of power. So our products are found throughout one of these ethylene crackers. The floors I mentioned before about the monolithics acting as a cement to support the weight of it at the bottom. Then as you move up the walls, at the lower end you've got bricks, again to provide structural support. But in that area close to the burners, you've got the highest temperature in the installation, and you've got a lot of turbulent air flows moving around as the gas gets burned, and the bricks are designed to deal with that high-speed air. As you move up, that's where we get our modules, which are pinned in place with anchoring points. And one of the areas that not a lot of people think about that can make a big difference to the efficiency of the system is backup insulation, which can be blankets, boards, or something I've touched on there, which is high insulation. That's our microporous products with a really controlled particle size and extremely small pores to be the most efficient insulator. I didn't really explain what I was going to do. So that's an example of how we use our products. I'm here to talk about decarbonization of us making them, but also how we can support people to reduce the amount of energy that they use and the amount of emissions that come from processes and industry. So to do that, first we consider our own products. So we define when we're considering our own emissions, we think about carbon that we use to create our product. We define the functional unit, which is, in this example, 1 kilo of fiber. We set the boundaries of the system, so we think about all the different raw materials that are being used and the carbon that's been used to produce and transport those raw materials. We think about the energy we use, so a fundamental part of the process to make a molten glass, which is then spun into a fiber. That takes place at 2,000 degrees, so it's very energy intensive. And finally, we use natural gas and water throughout the process, which has their own emissions associated, as well as waste and offcuts and things like that. All of that data is pulled together and put into a data emissions calculator, where we're able to come up with a number which says that we would use 1.2 kilos of carbon emissions for every kilo of fiber we make. And that's something that we're happy to report to our shareholders, but also on a product data sheet. Some of the challenges that we face are very dependent on the different types of products we make. So for fibers, that's highly influenced by scope 2 emissions. So you can see the graph on the left there. The biggest contributing factor in the fiber is the amount of manufacturing energy to heat up that furnace initially. That's an electrical arc furnace, so all of that's electricity. So we do see a lot of variation globally. For example, in our production site in Europe, which is based in France, we have no carbon emissions because it's nuclear energy. If we go to some of the other sites we have around the world, in China and India, we struggle a little bit more with carbon in the supply chain. So we're really keen on how some of the things I've listened to today will apply not just in the UK, but globally too. IFBs, the bricks I mentioned, they're highly influenced by scope 1 emissions because we use natural gas furnaces to burn out the bricks. So that's an area where I'm particularly interested in, and we've got projects ongoing to look at replacing the natural gas fuel. And then finally, we've got lightweight castables, where it's a completely different mix, and the actual carbon emission is primarily from the mining and the collection of the raw materials. So all of these are of interest to us, and they're something that we try to manage as we look to reduce our emissions. We also consider those emissions when we're talking to customers about the industrial the solutions that they might have to different problems. This tool that I've got on the slide here, I'm not going to go into too much detail on the left, but essentially what we have is a we're able to calculate the heat flow that might go through those lining installations that I was talking about, consider the fuel price of, of a specific customer, the cost of carbon emissions and how those are offset, and the quoted cost of the lining that we're providing. And we're able to consider, and also the carbon that we use to make the products that were recommended to you. And we would calculate over the service life the financial payback for the improved insulation systems that we can offer. And I guess I'll just skip to the next slide because it's probably the best. It's a clear sort of visual and numbered example where you can see the benefits of really focusing on the efficiency of your process and how some of the new products that we've developed and solutions that we're able to offer could help you save carbon emissions and make a financial saving as well. So we were lucky enough to have a customer who was happy to put three different furnace linings on. This was a 50 megawatt power furnace. It was heated up to 1260 degrees C, and the total area was 700 meters squared. And we're talking about an installation that would have a 16-year service life. If you compare the consumer-grade insulation on the left, that's used as a benchmark, you're looking at a situation where you're getting 1,400 watts per meter squared lost through the insulation at an actual surface temperature. I know you can't see that because of the color, but that pink, that's 150 degrees Celsius. The surface of that furnace will be quite hot, and there's a lot of energy escaping. If you were to just switch to a higher density pyroblock module and use some of the fibers that we've developed, you're able to reduce the power loss through that wall down to only 1,000 watts per meter squared. And the total footprint of the installation used to make that saving only goes from 36 kilos per meter squared to 54. And that pays itself back over 12 days. The lining temperature now, you can see the color's gone green. That's only dropped down to 100 degrees, within 2 degrees of what the calculation I was talking about had worked out. Over the entire 16-year lifetime of the furnace, that's a carbon emission reduction of 6,300 tons and a financial saving for that specific application of 2 million euros. If you were to look at some of the more the highest performing, the microporous insulation instead of the fiber blanket, which is the example on the right there, the temperature at the furnace wall drops down to only 80 degrees, and the power loss drops from 1,400 all the way down to 660. Again, this does have a cost of slightly more emissions used to make the products that go into that lining, but the payback's still only 18 days. And a potential saving over the entire lifetime of the furnace of 13,500 tons, which totals to 4 million euros. So I think, the overall message is that we are looking to improve the emissions that we use to reduce the emissions that we use to make our products. If you work with us and our application engineering teams to come up with the best insulation solution for some of the high temperature industries and applications for our products, you can make a big financial saving, but also work towards net zero by improving the efficiency of your own applications with a significant carbon saving. If you've got any questions further, I'm happy to pick them up in the questions answer in 50 minutes, half an hour. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Right. Thanks very much, Tom. It's actually interesting that I talked about data and then the next presenter comes up and presents a whole pile of data.